from Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California. I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk with artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the people who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. The playwright Tennessee Williams was best known for creating great female characters, but Williams himself felt that his greatest character was Big Daddy from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. It's no wonder, then, that you need a great character actor to do justice to that role, and today's guest on the field trip, Charles Siebert, is just that. Siebert has a face and a career which epitomizes the expression, been there, done that. In 7 different Broadway productions beginning in the 1960s, he's worked on stage with Dustin Hoffman, Maureen Stapleton, and Sir Anthony Quayle. In film, he's worked alongside Al Pacino, Barbara Streisand, Gene Hackman, and Kevin Bacon. But it's on TV where he made his name famous, starring first in daytime TV in One Life to Live, As the World Turns, Another World, and his most popular role as Dr. Stanley Riverside on 7 seasons of Trapper John M.D., where he also began his directing career. During the 1980s, Siebert was a regular celebrity guest on the popular game shows Match Game and the $25,000 Pyramid. He's been a Sonoma County resident for the past 20 years, and he's currently starring as Big Daddy in the hit new production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof at the 6th Street Playhouse in Santa Rosa. And he has a particularly interesting connection to that play, which I'll ask him about. Please welcome to the field trip, Charlie Siebert. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mitchell. That was that long introduction. You have to be very old in order to have amassed all those credits, it seems to me.
Well,
but I'm still standing, I'm still here, and happy to talk to you.
Well, very good and very experienced, as well as a little old.
A little old, yes, if there's such a thing.
Well, I hope my listeners won't think I'm being cute calling you Charlie, but I'm told that that's what you prefer.
That's my name. That's my name to my friends, so please.
Well, thank you.
Use it.
Well, first, let me congratulate you on your fabulous performance and also on the great production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof on 6th Street. I saw it the other night, and it was great.
It's a very, very good production. I'm very proud of it. 6th Street has done itself proud. I think they're feeling awfully good about it. The audience's responses have been wonderful, and we're close to selling out for the rest of the run.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, I know you've said that Big Daddy is not only larger than life, but also he's funny and that you can never get tired of playing him. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, he's such a richly drawn character. He's a southern redneck, a phrase I think that he would be proud of. He was born in the early part of the 20th century, quit school at the age of 10, so probably around fifth grade, and went to work as a field hand and worked his way up to become the owner of one of the largest plantations in the South. He owns 28,000 acres of what he calls the richest land this side of the Valley Nile, which is Tennessee Williams' very colorful way of describing it. And he's got a lot of cash and blue chip stocks as well, which he alludes to in the play. So he's a great success and entirely a self-made man. And he will put up with no nonsense from anyone. He's a straight talker. He's a straight shooter. He doesn't like lies and lying. He doesn't like mendacity and what he calls hypocrisy. And he's a very colorful and salty character. And as you said in the introduction, Tennessee Williams, he was really Tennessee Williams' proudest creation. I think because he was so different from Williams. Williams was known for drawing the wonderful female characters which you referred to, and we all love those: Maggie the Cat and Blanche DuBois, and Streetcar Named Desire, and Princess Alexandra and Sweet Bird of Youth, etc. Fabulous characters, and Amanda in the Glass Menagerie. But Big Daddy is his favorite character, I think, because he was so far from him, his own personality, and yet he drew him with tremendous vitality and vigor and colorful and salty language. He captured what he called his crude eloquence, and I like that description.
Well, I think you captured it too.
Well, thank you very much. I'm having a lot of fun with it, as I think you could probably tell from the audience.
I could. Now, this isn't the first time you've appeared in this show, but once before you played a different role in the show.
I played Gooper with the older son of the two sons in the play, the jerk of a son, as it happens, in the first Broadway revival of it on Broadway in 1974. The play was originally presented on Broadway in 1955. I participated in the 20th anniversary revival of it, at which time Tennessee Williams was still alive and worked on the play with us. The play started in Stratford, Connecticut at the old American Shakespeare Festival, which no longer exists, but then we took it to Broadway, and Tennessee was there and worked on it, rewrote a considerable amount of it to his great satisfaction, and in fact, the script that came out of that production is the definitive script. It's the one that everybody does now. It was a big success. There have been 5 Broadway revivals, I think, since the original presentation, and ours is the longest running one. We had Elizabeth Ashley playing Maggie the Cat, who was really fabulous. She was a Southern girl. She was from Louisiana and a wonderfully gifted actress, and Tennessee pronounced her perfect. And we also had Fred Gwynne playing Big Daddy, which is something that a lot of people might not realize. Fred Gwynne, who was a great comic actor, was also a great serious actor, and he was wonderful as Big Daddy. So it was quite a successful production, and I played Gooper in that. Keir DeLay was Brick in that production.
Well, as you probably know, they've just opened a new production of Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Yes, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the appeal is for shows like that and like the one that you're doing, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and why they've lasted so long.
Well, they're called classics. Classics are classics because they speak to everybody over the ages. I mean, we still go and see Shakespeare, which is almost 500 years old now, his work, not him. And it's because there's something in those plays and in those characters that speaks to us, to our own contemporary psyches and emotions and attitudes. And it's the same with these great plays. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is a play about a family, rock bottom. It's about a family, and I think most of the world's great drama and literature is actually about family, because it's where we all start out, and it is the cauldron in which we are cooked. Same thing in Death of a Salesman. Not the same kind of story, but it's about a family that is in great crisis and is trying to respond to the mores of its time, and Willie Loman, the character there, is finding it very, very difficult to keep up with the changing times of in that time, which was back, 1949, I think. That's about 6 years before Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, in fact. Arthur Miller, who wrote Death of a Salesman and Tennessee Williams, along with Eugene O'Neill, are probably the greatest American playwrights of the 20th century. And so they just keep coming. In addition to which, this past year has been Tennessee Williams' centenary. So his plays are really being done all over the world, revivals of them, and they're all just wonderful plays. They're great to see. I had the good fortune to appear in Cat as Big Daddy a couple of months ago down in Tallahassee in a different production from this one. And so I have a kind of a proprietary feeling about this play.
Well, you're originally from Kenosha, Wisconsin, but you studied your craft in London at the London Academy of Dramatic Arts. How did that work?
Well, from Kenosha, my hometown, as you rightly say. I went to college, university at Marquette University in Milwaukee, which was not very far down the road. And that's where I got into theater. In fact, I fell into the clutches of an inspirational teacher, a wonderful man named John Walsh, who was a Jesuit priest. Marquette was a Catholic school. I wasn't Catholic, but I went off to Marquette to go to journalism school. But in my second year in college, just for a lark, I took an acting class and fell under the spell of this very, very wonderful teacher and great man who set me on the path of my career. And once I'd finished there, it was a time, this is in the early 60s, when people like Olivier and Alec Guinness were making a lot of movies, and I was seeing those movies, and that intrigued me, what they were doing, which I hadn't had any real serious training in the classics when I was in college. So I decided to go over to the to the home of it, really, to the home of Shakespeare in England, and study there, and that turned out to be a very, very good choice. I got a good training in the classics there, and then returned to the States in the mid-60s, just at the time that the regional theater movement was really beginning to blossom. And in those theaters, they were doing classics, and they needed classically trained actors. And at the time, there were, the really dominant school of acting was the Actor's Studio and the Method, and they were not terribly interested in language and classics. So I had some of that training, so I was able to start working pretty quickly and pretty regularly, and that was good too.
Well, later on, you got to work as a TV director. I know, for instance, that you worked on both Silk Stockings and Xena the Warrior Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about that, how you transitioned and what it's like directing.
Well, it's an old joke amongst actors. Actually, what I want to do is direct, but in fact, it was true of me. I always did want to direct, and I thought I would always be a director, but I had a good career going as an actor, and I had a family, and I didn't want to too much upset the apple cart. But once I got on a television series, the comfort and security of being on a television series, Trapper John M.D., a show that was on CBS in the early 80s, I had the opportunity to start to learn directing, to learn everything there was to know about making film. Making movies. And so I directed several episodes there. I think I directed actually 7 episodes of Trapper John M.D., and that gave me my basic training and my vocabulary. And then I started to seek work in that arena and eventually got some. And some of it was Xena and Hercules, The Amazing Journeys. These were shows that were shot down in New Zealand in the 90s, and they were mythologically based. They were great fun. They were rather big productions, so there was a lot to handle with that. And But it was just terrific work, and I loved the people I was working with down there. They were great people, very, very talented. Lucy Lawless played Xena, as a wonderful, wonderful human being. And so that was it. I got some training in it and started seeking the work, and things started to happen.
Well, we were talking about families, and I know that there's the next generation of your family is in the entertainment business also.
Yes, and I'm very proud of it. My son Christopher is the piano player, arranger, and conductor of LaVey Smith and her Red Hot Skillet Lickers, a well-known Bay Area jazz band. They've been around for about 20 years now. Very, very successful and very, very beloved. They're a terrific band. They play the American Songbook, really, some stuff from the jump, jive, and swing from the 40s and 50s, and they play at all the best venues in the Bay Area, Yoshi's and Biscuits and Blues, and they were at the top of the mark for a long time, Café du Nord. And I travel around the country and really around the world doing that. So, yes, that's my older son. My younger son, Andy, who actually is named after me, his name is Charles, and now calls himself Charlie, was the guitar player for a long time. But he's now left the band, and he's off in China teaching English. So, yes, my offspring and my daughter, I have to mention her, too, Jillian, who lives out in Colorado, is an art teacher at a middle school out there. So they're all involved in the arts, and I'm very, very proud of them.
Well, for my guests all around the Bay Area, if you want to see a fabulous show, it's running until March 25th at the 6th Street Playhouse in Santa Rosa. It's Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, starring fabulous Charlie Siebert. I'd suggest you get over there. You can go to 6thstreetplayhouse.com for tickets. And Charlie, continued success to you and to 6th Street, and thanks for taking us on a field trip today.
Thank you, Mitchell. I appreciate it. Let me just say that there are only 5 more performances this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, evenings plus 2 matinees Saturday and Sunday. So anybody who wants to see it, and you all should, get there quick.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's Charlie Siebert, everybody. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you very much, Mitchell. Nice to talk to you.
Great talking to you. That's Charlie Siebert, everyone. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet with the fabulous Marin Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on Comcast Cable Channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you like today's show, please tell your friends. If you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.
We hope you enjoyed the preceding Radio Sausalito presentation. You'll find more great jazz programming and podcasts updated every week online at radiosausalito.org.